Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to an ACC podcast. This is going to be our week two rundown in the ACC, and I'm Lauren Brownlow, since I always forget to say that, from WRALsportsfan.com and 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. This week, I'm joined by John Cacillo. I thought I would have John from Noon's Magician on SB Nation. I thought I would have John a little bit later in the week as Syracuse was going to be hosting they're still going to be hosting Clemson. The game has not been called off just yet. right. But instead Syracuse went to Maryland, which I think I did think was going to be a tough game. I'm sure Syracuse folks did too. And instead of just losing a tight one or winning, got absolutely destroyed. John, hi. And what happened?
I knew it was going to be a close game. I think a lot of Syracuse fans did too. I think the big issue here was when your athletic department is completely inept and schedules two games on the road, even a couple years ago when they knew they were probably going to be changing quarterbacks, that doesn't account for, you know, turning over three of five offensive linemen, replacing both of your linebackers. The recipe was here, and then having two teams with new coaches and basically no game film to work off of, the recipe was there for this to happen. I don't think anyone expected either team to be able to blow the doors off the other like this. Final score is a little deceptive. I would say the margin's probably, I mean, it's still a blowout, but I would say the margin's probably closer to like 28 than like 43.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Nonetheless, yeah, I think that, you know, people were a little concerned against Liberty when we didn't necessarily like run them off the field. And yeah, whatever Mike Locksley saw on film there, obviously gave him a reason to just, you know, read option us to death on Saturday, which is what happened.
So were we too, do you think we gave Syracuse a little bit too much benefit of the doubt in the preseason? I mean, I know for me, I did rank them, and part of the reason was, look, that's a 10-win team that's extremely well coached. I liked what I saw out of Tommy DeVito last season whenever he was in, and Dino Babers knows how to run a good offense, and I thought they would be improved defensively, especially up front, more so than anything else. But did we just gave them a little too much credit, do you think, maybe, for what they did last year?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, like, you know, SU scheduled itself into the ground for well over a decade, and then in the last couple of years has finally like come around to figuring out, like, oh, if you play Clemson and Florida State and like at least one other good ACC team every year, maybe, you know, don't schedule Northwestern, Missouri, USC in the same non-conference season, which we did do ourselves once. But like, I think the big issue here is that the offensive line, the fact that it's young, the fact that they're replacing so much experience, I think we kind of expected them to be a little more gelled by this point, and it hasn't necessarily happened. And then the linebackers, I mean, people forget, last year, like at the beginning of the year until the North Carolina game, which was about midway when we won our fifth game of the year, like the run defense was bad. And it was a lot because the linebackers just, you know, weren't inexperienced and they weren't good. And this year, those linebackers are gone. We have even less experience replacing them. The position's kind of thin, to be honest, and really thin on experience in general. So those guys were just caught looking pretty much like, I mean, Josh Jackson last week, any play action, they bit immediately. And that's how you had an entire middle of the field open on any pass he threw.
Yeah.
So I don't think we were given too much credit as much as most reasonable onlookers thought, oh, okay, well, it's the same coaches, like front, top to bottom, same exact coaches.
Yeah.
So much experience back. There's a good chance that they're going to be able to figure this out. And unfortunately, I think us included as Syracuse fans thought, like forgot that we've only been recruiting at like a top 55 level over the last like decade.
Yeah. And I saw this tweet too, and I don't think it's, I think it's worth mentioning as well that somebody was saying, you know, it's tough to overestimate the impact of losing, you know, a four-year quarterback and a really good quarterback at that on a team that's not, you know, a power in college football and one that just sort of rotates guys in and out every single year. It can be trickier to replace than people think.
Yeah, and as much as, you know, I don't even think it's, like, I think Tommy DeVito is probably going to put up better numbers than Dungy did.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, because he's a more efficient quarterback. I mean, he didn't have a great game, yet still had 330 yards, three touchdowns, and completed 71% of his passes on Saturday. It's like all makes no sense when you look at like the box score.
Right.
But I think
he had a bad pick, but that was about it. I mean, his line was much better than the Liberty game for sure.
Oh, yeah. And like you look at like most of Dungy's box scores, like they don't really look as good as that did. Like,
listen, Dungy was art. Like it was like art watching him play football. It was not, he was not to be quantified in a box score format.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that's what fans are kind of trying to reckon with now is like, you know, I said during the game, like Tommy DeVito does a better job of avoiding pressure than Dungy does. The problem is, he doesn't know what to do once he does.
Right.
Eric Dungy needed the pressure in order to do the things that he did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he needed things to be bad.
And yeah, he needed like a gremlin. Like you need to like, you know, get him wet, like eat him up and then.
Oh, I miss him already a little bit. What does this mean for Clemson? I mean, I don't want to look too far ahead. This isn't just, I don't want to break it down or anything, but look, Syracuse has been the only team in the league really the only team in the league that has given Clemson problems consistently in the last few years or beaten them. And so what does this mean for that game? Like, do you think we're going to get another close one of these? Did Syracuse take a huge hit to their confidence? Like, does this mean anything at all for Clemson or not?
I know Dino is trying to avoid doing too much on offense before the Clemson game because he didn't want to let the cat out of the bag. Like, at the same time, I don't think we're going to be able to fix absolutely everything. I think the offense, though, is going to be less of a concern. I think DeVito obviously has improved game over game and within a game, as he did last week. I think the problem is going to be the linebackers can't stop the run. McKinley Williams, our best run stopper, has been out the first two games. And if he's not back and the linebackers don't suddenly become five-star prospects, they're just going to do the same thing Maryland did. I mean, they don't have the mobility when Trevor Lawrence that Josh Jackson has with Maryland. But Travis Etienne is one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in the country. And they're just going to pound us with him. And then when we get so concerned about that we stack the box, Trevor Lawrence is just going to eat us alive over the middle. So I don't see us losing by 43. Just because it's our first home game of the year, there should be a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of hype. It's going to be a pretty full dome, if not completely sold out. It is sold out, but now fans started jumping ship after this. I still see us probably losing by 20.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And that gets us to Clemson as we keep going around the league since, you know, we already mentioned them. That game actually played out like I thought it would. I know that national pundits were talking about, ooh, Clemson's on upset alert and look at Kellen Mond. But so much went right in that game for A&M last year. And it was kind of fluky the way he was like actually better under pressure than he was not under pressure. And I knew Clemson would be mad at the way he performed against them and want to get a little bit of revenge. So it really, that one kind of played out the way I thought it would. And Clemson is every bit as good, I think, as we thought they were going to be yet again.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Clemson, like, while, you know, they may not be recruiting. I mean, they're still recruiting at the top 10 level, maybe in top five most years, but, like, they're not recruiting at the Alabama-Georgia level.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter, because you just look at just what Dabo's been able to build there. And, like, realistically, last year, like, Trevor Lawrence was not this good during the A&M game. He also wasn't the starter in the A&M game. Like, so you have to account for him now in this matchup, the fact that they were at home, the fact that Jimbo just can't seem to beat Dabo of late. I think that, you know, Clemson's kind of starting to adopt that, like, Alabama type, like, workman efficiency, where just like, all right, just get out and get the win, because what really matters is the playoff.
What did that anonymous coach say? What do you call him, like, a war machine or something? Yeah. in the Athlon previews? Not inaccurate.
At this point, like, and given what the ACC schedule looks like, I don't know why you'd over, like, exude yourself if you don't have to.
No, that's a good point. That's a good way. But yeah, I thought that was pretty impressive performance by Clemson. I don't know that there were a whole ton of noteworthy results. I thought Virginia was good on them for taking care of business over William & Mary. 52-17, they looked pretty good. They did slide into the rankings this week, I believe, finally. I've been ranking both them and Syracuse all season. Obviously, Syracuse slid right out of my rankings this week, but Virginia finally makes it in. I thought that was well-deserved because they brought back a lot. But yeah, they looked pretty good. Also on Friday night, Wake Forest, man. See, now I'm already kind of getting excited for what will be, like, take the over game of next week as Wake hosts North Carolina in a non-conference game. Don't even get me started on the weirdness of that whole thing, but whatever. In a non-conference game, two undefeated teams that have shown themselves plenty capable, I think, of scoring and have pretty good quarterback play so far. That one I'm kind of excited to see, because Wake has looked offensively really, really good.
Yeah, Jamie Newman's looked really good. I think we saw some flashes last year of what he could do. He's been super accurate this year, too. Obviously, it's just Rice, but at the same time, like, he did let up 21 points to Rice.
Yeah.
So I think people were a little concerned about this Wake defense, and I think it's warranted. We'll see what happens against North Carolina. I think that'll be a better test compared to what we've seen so far as to, like, what they're going to give up per game this year.
I'm going to be, like, disappointed if that doesn't hit, like, the over-under is probably going to be in the high 60s, right? I'll be disappointed if it doesn't go over, like, literally whatever the mark is, because I think it totally could.
I haven't seen what the over-under is yet.
I know last year,
though, like, the game between us and Florida State going in, everyone was like, oh, like, you know, pound the over.
That's true.
and then it was like a 30-3 game and it was miserable. So, I mean, it could happen, but I'd hit the over on here.
Yeah, and in the nothing to see here department, really, NC State takes care of Western Carolina after a very sleepy start. I covered that. Oh, hello. I got an email alert. I'm going to have to go to Do Not Disturb. So sorry. But yeah, I I got, you know, I think NC State had a sleepy start there. They end up winning pretty easily over Western Carolina. But yeah, Western Carolina is very bad. And I was a little alarmed at first because, yeah, it didn't look like they were going to pull away as quickly as I thought. But the defense did what it needed to do. The offense did what it needed to do. Nothing really to see there. Boston College takes care of Richmond. They continue to look pretty good on offense. Nothing really to take away from that. Took Duke a little bit of time to pull away from NCA&T. I'm not going to put too much stock into that one way or the other. You go from playing Alabama. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is that. I still think their defense, like, their starters on defense are really, really good, but they don't have any depth, and their offense is going to be a question mark for me. They took some time to get going. They ended up playing really well offensively, but they took a little bit of time to get going. So we'll see. I don't know what to make of Duke just yet. I actually feel like I know better what to make of almost every other team, like, than in the Coastal, even, than I do Duke. And it's a weirdly disconcerting thing. But yeah, I don't really understand. I don't know what to make of Duke just yet. It's hard to, like you said, they go from playing Alabama to A&T. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine, right? Like, I have no idea.
I mean, I picked Duke to upset us, like, even in the preseason. I picked Duke to upset us later in the year.
Really?
I just felt like it was going to be one of those spots where, like, SU, like, if SU was actually having the season that a lot of people thought, like, SU be feeling themselves a little too much, looking ahead to like, you know, a potential Orange Bowl bid.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then get tripped up. I mean, like I said, Duke has a really good defense. I know they don't have a ton of depth, but like, you know, that defense could potentially, you know, catch a first year starter and potential and dealing with some injuries maybe by that point in the season,
right.
Like catch them looking a little bit. But I mean, now I think it's a little more likely than even I thought earlier in the year.
Also, it's worth noting though that like Duke, for whatever reason, and this is a whole other topic, but like Duke does not play as well at home as they do on the road, which makes, I realize, like next to no sense, but that's just been Duke lately, where they just don't play as well at home for whatever reason as they do on the road. So I actually have kind of like bookmarked that as a potential loss, because I don't know that I like that one, but we'll see. It'll be interesting. I mean, they haven't played in a while, right? It's been a little bit.
We played the second year in the ACC, so 2014.
Yeah, it's been a few years, so
the
I'll be curious.
You know,
yeah.
Cross-division split where you're basically in different conferences.
See, and like I get why people make fun of like the Wake UNC thing being non-conference, but I think it's good. Like I'd rather see that than the alternative. You know, that they don't play each other at all. So I don't mind it. I know that it's weird and it makes no sense, but I really don't mind it at all. So, yeah, like so we don't know what to make of Duke. Really, it really doesn't matter. They won. They took care of business. East and Louisville continues to look pretty good under Scott Satterfield. I thought that was at least newsworthy to mention, because like I think we were all impressed with how they looked against Notre Dame, 42-0 against Eastern Kentucky. Yes, it's Eastern Kentucky, but other than the highlight of the game being the Eastern Kentucky players doing the Lady Birds dance moves in a huddle late in the game, like there's really nothing to see here. And I don't know that we would have said that about Louisville last year playing almost anyone, even an FCS team. So I continue to be impressed with Scott Satterfield.
Yeah, they looked rough in the FCS game last year. So
yeah.
I feel like this is like Indiana State maybe, and I think they only won by like 14.
Yeah.
But this, this team looks, I mean, it couldn't have looked worse, but this team looks better on both sides of the ball. I think that they could be a 5-ish win team, maybe 6, depending on like how that like middle tier of the Atlantic looks by the time they play Louisville.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the talent level is better than what Syracuse has. It's largely better than like what Wake has, but it's not. It's still a top 45-ish team in terms of what's on the roster. So you know, the fact that Satterfield's such a good coach and he's been able to kind of hit the ground running there isn't necessarily all that surprising.
Yeah, and obviously it shows a lot about Petrino as well and how much they hated him, which,
well,
you know,
I mean, he's very easy to hate.
That's very, very true. So, yeah, that was worth noting, I thought, even though it was an FCS game. Georgia Tech. Before we get into like the meh division of results here, I do not think this is a meh result at all. I was not expecting to see Georgia Tech win a game for a little while. It was pretty ugly, but I mean, they'll take it. I was impressed that they were able to win. Like I was surprised. I know it's been a rough time for Charlie Strong and whatever at South Florida, but I still did not think that they were going to win that game. I really didn't.
I mean, Tech manages to win like one game they definitely shouldn't have pretty much every year.
Yeah.
TBD if this is that one.
That's true. That's a good point. But it's like, it was too early for them to, in my opinion, to win a game. And then they're coming off, you know, playing Clemson and you're like, okay, where are they going to be at confidence wise? But I mean, it seemed to, I'm impressed. I'm impressed early on. I thought that this would be one of those teams that people in the Coastal would be able to beat, and that would be like their sure win of the year.
That's not a Coastal thing.
That's true. You make a good counter argument, but I was like, wow, this will be the year where there's like actually a team, because you're right, that's not a Coastal thing. Like everybody in the Coastal can beat everybody else in the Coastal pretty much. And but I thought that would be the exception this year with them rebuilding their offense. I don't know that it's going to be, especially later in the year. Like I think the later it gets, the less you want to play them.
Honestly, I think that team might be Pitt this year. It's the Coastal team that you're probably going to get a win against. I just feel like, you know, last year they caught lightning in a bottle, but also had like 2,000-yard rushers. And I still don't believe in Kenny Pickett. As a Syracuse fan, I just inherently don't like Pitt. But I don't think that Narduzzi's impressed. And I think this is the year that like finally kind of comes to roost a little bit.
Yeah, that gets us to Pitt, actually. I would put Pitt's result in like the meh pile in terms of like, okay, you beat Ohio by 10, you didn't lose to them, so congrats, question mark. But and the defense actually has looked okay through 2 weeks. I feel like that's about to change this weekend when they play Penn State. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not a believer in Kenny Pickett. They haven't really had anybody else emerge that can run the ball all that reliably. And yeah, I feel like Pitt is due for a little bit of a drop back to earth here. But is that the ACC rival? Like, do you think that's the closest thing for y'all?
I mean, BC is our rival.
What? Really?
I mean, they were our rival for years back in the, like, because we had...
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, for a very long time, like, us, Penn State, Pitt, and West Virginia, like, had, like, kind of a quote-unquote, like, Big Four situation, where, mm-hmm. like, we'd all face each other in most sports, but especially football, and, like, BC was involved in that sometimes, too. Like, we faced them for a very long time, and, like, they're, I mean, the closest to us in proximity in terms of miles. Like, us and Pitt have always said, like, in basketball and football, like, we don't really, we just have bigger, both of us have bigger fish to fry at all times because okay. like both of us consider West Virginia a bigger rival in football than each other. Like they also have like Penn State. They also have potentially Maryland. I don't know. Like,
oh, it's, interesting.
It's always been this weird thing where like we're never each other's top rival and we just don't, like we don't hate each other. We just don't care about one another. We don't want each other to do well.
So it's kind of like, oh, you again.
Yeah, it's probably like UNC Wake Forest. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's probably about right. Yeah, it's like, oh, you guys again. Great. I guess we dislike you. Not
well,
sure.
Yeah. And then like, you know, it just becomes this like thing that like the ACC forced on us where it's like, oh, we have to cross over with you guys every year. Like, well, we'd rather face Miami because of recruiting and also because we had some good games with Miami back when we were in the Big East and Virginia Tech, who we had great games with back uh-huh. when we were in the Big East. Like, I think for most of us, yeah, we'd rather face them. And like, that's the ACC is not realigning divisions anytime soon. So chances are we're going to be facing Pitt for eternity.
No, they're not. And I guess one school is doing their part to they're doing their damnedest to ensure that the Atlantic Division stays just as meh outside of.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Clemson as the Coastal, and that's Florida State. Oh, that boy. Nice. And I bring up Florida State to make you feel a little better, I hope. I hope that watching the end of that game gave every Syracuse fan a little bit of a warm feeling inside on what was a cold, cold day, because I know, oh my gosh, 45-44 over ULM. They only win after one overtime because ULM misses an extra point. And wow. You know what? It's funny. I was in the press box before Carolina Miami at this point, right? Like, but when this game's on TV and a Carolina staffer, Florida State's up 24-7 at half. It wasn't a Carolina staffer. It's another media member. It wasn't a Carolina staffer, but it was a media member. I forget who it was actually that joked. They were like, oh, well, ULM's got Florida State right where they want them because Florida State was up 24-7 at half. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, right. Okay. And lo and behold, they sure did. Wow. And just a complete and utter collapse by Florida State again after holding a big halftime lead against a G5 team. And this G5 team is not Boise. Like, Boise is good. Right. This team is not good. I don't know a way out here for Florida State. I really don't.
Well, Florida State's going to learn how to hydrate, apparently.
And
Willie Taggart is now coaching for his job, I think, for the rest of this year. Because, like, if ULM had gone for two, like most people would do in that situation, and beat them, he might have been run out of town this weekend. This was rough. I mean, at least the offense is working, so I feel like they're not going to completely squander Cam Akers' career.
Poor Cam Akers. Gosh. He literally won that game for them. Like, yeah. They don't win the game without him. He was so, so good. And I just, you're like you said, yeah, we're not going to get the full Akers experience, honestly. Like, what could have been with a competent offensive line? He had 193 yards, two touchdowns, 55 yards receiving, and another touchdown. That dude is everything, and I love him, and he deserves better. But like you said, they do seem to have like a functional offense, so there's that. But they continue to be so mentally fragile. I'll be honest with you, and I'm not trying to be too dramatic when I say this. I don't know that he makes it through the year if it keeps up like this. Willie Taggart.
No, I'm going to pull up the schedule very quick, and I know this makes terrible radio.
No, no, please do.
But yeah, so at UVA, nope. Louisville, subtly dicey. NC State. At Clemson, at Wake, Syracuse, Miami, at BC. Like, there isn't a this schedule
There's
doesn't
no sure win.
This doesn't give up until they face Alabama State or Alcorn State in that last game. Alabama State. Okay, so the second to last game, they have Alabama State. But like realistically, this thing does not let up for the rest of the season. This could go very, very wrong. And I think if they lose, to be honest, I feel like if they lose to Cuse and they struggle up until then, like they could be looking at like, you know, what is that? One, two.
I mean,
that's the eighth game. If they're 3-5 after eight, he's done.
I don't know that he lasts through the year at this point. It's just, I don't think he's a bad coach. Like I know some people do. I just don't know that it has been a good fit at all. And he continuously has just stepped in it every which way and made the wrong decision.
People forget how bad USF started though. I mean, like I don't think it's going to work out here, but like USF, like first 2 years, like he was going to get fired until he managed to beat Syracuse down in Tampa. And then suddenly everything turned around. That season turned around. His tenure turned around. Like we never got to see the bottom drop out at Oregon because he was only there for a year. Like,
right.
This is, and like at the beginning of Western Kentucky, I believe he struggled too. Like this could be par for the Willie Taggart course. I just feel like Willie has the additional stresses of having to quickly scramble and make things look passable right now. And that's not something at the other jobs that like he had to do. They were like, all right, you're going to,
yeah, they gave him, he had more patience. He had more time. Yeah. He doesn't have that benefit here at all.
No. And I think that's something like he probably should have, I mean, the Noles should have considered, but he should have too before he took the job.
Yes. And he should have considered before he went in front of the media and was all like, oh, yeah, we're going to still be pretty good. Maybe tamp that down a little bit, dude. Like, don't
buy an offensive line.
Yeah, right. Like, did you find some linemen mysteriously that Jimbo hid under a rock or something that he wasn't using? Cause yeah, that line was a disaster, but so that's Florida State and it's a tire fire. There's another team from Florida though, to kind of cap us off here that I don't, Virginia Tech. I didn't mention them beating ODU. Again,
accomplishments.
You know what? Yeah. We all have to have something. We all have to have something, right? It was a win.
One game winning streak over the Monarchs.
Woo. Yeah. You take back that state, Hokies. You take it back. Oh, boy. Yeah, that didn't play out. Even that game left Hokies fans feeling a little grumpy. I get it. It was a little closer than the final would indicate because it was like a 7-point game in the fourth. But, that's another school that I'm not sure has the best fit right now, but we'll see. I don't think we learned anything based on the way they looked against Old Dominion, except they won the game and that's it. And the quarterback got pulled. That's it. I think that's all we know. I still think they'll be a factor in the Coastal somehow, mostly because of their schedule, but we'll see. Miami at North Carolina. Speaking of Florida teams that maybe people would think were on fire, but I don't think so. I really don't. We can get into this a little bit, but that was the nightcap. I was at that game covering it. I didn't expect Carolina to win it. I did expect it to be a good game. One of those things happened, and then Carolina ends up winning it somehow. And you know, I still don't quite know what to make of North Carolina. I did rank them this week, partially because like if you
two P5 wins,
yeah. And not all P5s are created equally. I understand that, but it's not like they beat like Rutgers in Kansas. You know, I mean, like they beat two pretty functional, pretty talented P5s. there are teams that have better individual wins than North Carolina, you know, like Clemson's win over A&M, and Clemson has two P5 wins too. USC, I would throw Fresno in that almost P5, you know, kind of category. Then they crush Stanford. Like, that's pretty good. Hawaii is atop the Pac-12 standings right now with their two Pac-12 wins. It's not like I'm putting Carolina in the college football playoff or anything, but I put them in the low 20s, and it seems crazy based on where I thought they'd be at the beginning of the year, but it also seems accurate right now. And I don't really know how to come to grips with that reality. I don't know what it's going to mean later, you know, like, I don't know where they're going to be down the road, but I think I saw you tweet this though, John, like, are they the best team in the Coastal?
Probably not. But at the
probably
same
not.
Time, I mean, I wish we were living in the reality that Syracuse fans wanted here, which was
right.
When he was going to hire Greg Robinson as a defense coordinator. And then we would just get to make jokes for years on end and cover UNC football in a concerted way. Mac is doing exactly what he was hired to do. He wasn't hired to potentially like contend for national title. He was hired to fix the house, bring some professionalism, I guess, back to like the proceedings, you know, end the war on football.
I was going to say
all these things and
not
like
say things like that.
Yeah, you know, not be a dumbass and then proceed to, and then like at least make it look, I mean, look at the recruiting right now. Like, I know that, you know, September recruiting rankings aren't the end all be all, but he's clearly taking advantage of what UNC has had at their disposal for so long in terms of in-state talent, in terms of access to the rest of the talent in the Southeast. Like, UNC, I mean, I know everyone in ACC country knows this for years because it's always been this joke that, like, UNC is a sleeping giant. Like,
right.
Mac isn't going to cash in on that, but he could keep them respectable enough so that when when he retires and the hot coaching prospect is sitting out there when that happens, that they're like, you know what, UNC has great bones. Like, you know, it's basically like home buying. Great bones.
It's like a teardown.
This is great bones, great street, great schools. Like, maybe a new coat of paint in the kitchen, fix the countertops, and we're good.
Get modern appliances.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, Mac is not going to run a modern program necessarily, but he's trying.
It's
weird.
He hired
really good assistants too, though. Like, yeah, he understood what he couldn't do, and addressed it with his assistant hires, which I think is what you would expect most good coaches to do.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest question going into this was, would he delegate to those assistants and properly and just sort of let them do their thing? And so far he really has. So I was very dubious of this hire. I thought it was a bad idea. It appears early on that I was wrong. We'll see going forward. But yeah, and I do have to at least mention this week, this might be a regular thing, like this week in Mac Brown shade, because after the Miami game, he said, Miami has had a reputation as one of those teams that, you know, you hit them in the mouth and you get them down and they just roll over. And I'm like, my goodness, Mark Richt, I wonder if he's watching this on the ACC network going, hey, what did I do to you? Like, what's your problem?
Mac probably has done with a lot of notes in his days in the media. He's just been ready to unload the cannon. And now he's got his chance.
He's really good at this, though. Like, he will say something that you go like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then you think about it for a minute and like it doesn't sound mean. And you think about it and you're like, whoa, that was actually like mildly spicy of a thing to say about another program. But yeah, I mean, he's sticking up for his guy, Manny Diaz, because he said like Manny's the right guy here. And I think he's right. Like UNC looked good because they have good quarterback play. You know, they're playing competently, everything else, you know, like we talked about. But I really like Miami's quarterback, and I think that they're going to win games this year that they would not have won last year because they didn't have a quarterback. Jaren Williams, I thought, played really, really well too, and their defense is still really talented. And I mean, look, they were a Bubba Baxa missed field goal away from sending it to overtime and maybe winning. So I don't think this means anything is wrong in Miami. They've played Florida and Carolina in the first two games. We'll see on like crisis mode in Miami. I think that they're going to be okay.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the same issue that, like, in some ways that, like, Syracuse had. The scheduling thing. If you open two straight games away from home, like, well, you have a bunch of young players. What the hell do you expect? Like, and obviously Miami, you know, has played those games closer than Syracuse did in both of those. But I think they're going to be fine. I mean, these next two games, they'll be able to get their heads on straight with Bethune-Cookman and Central Michigan. So they'll be all right. They'll get another bye in there before they get Virginia Tech and Virginia, which that two-game stretch could end up deciding the Coastal, for all we know. But yeah, I think Miami's fine.
So we'll wrap it up on this, but for a hot minute after, you know, Syracuse was in the middle of getting destroyed, there was talk about, oh my gosh, this is like such a bad week in the ACC and everything's in crisis mode. I tended to think Virginia was going to slide into the rankings, which they did. Not the end of the world. There's been talk that like the ACC only having one other ranked team besides Clemson was this big deal. I've maintained that I think more than that will be ranked at the end of the year. How many ACC teams do you think by the end of the year will be in the top 25? It's a tough one, right?
I think it might be three. I think Clemson is the obvious one. I think whoever wins the Coastal probably wins 9 games. So that's 2. And then it really just depends on whether or not there's like a logjam atop the Coastal, or if Syracuse or like Wake Forest or NC State like finds a way to win 9 games. Like that's really the wild card. I don't think the conference is in crisis, obviously, based on just like all the off the field stuff with the network and all the on the field stuff with continuing to make the playoff and make a lot of money. At the same time, like it would probably behoove everybody to like close some of that gap. And like, but that's where the ACC is kind of different than a lot of other leagues where, you know, it really is dependent on Miami, Florida State, Virginia Tech in particular, maybe Georgia Tech too, to close that gap more than everybody else, just because they are the clearly football first schools that were like specifically brought in for the most part to do that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm with you. I don't think it's the end of the world. They haven't lost any FCS or anything like that. And it's, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a rebuilding year across the league, but as long as Clemson is Clemson, I think that's all the ACC really has to worry about. So,
exactly.
And sadly that might come at your Orange's expense, I mean, next week.
Yeah, probably. And if it doesn't, then, you know, then nothing makes sense. And his team that lost by 43 will have an inside track at a playoff spot. I mean, whatever.
I was going to say, yeah, if it doesn't, then that means Syracuse continues to work to sabotage the ACC.
Us awful Northerners just come in and just wreck the place.
It's the Jim Boeheim plan.
I think that Jim Boeheim is going to retire and then open 17 Denny's in Central New York just to prove a point.
He's going to retire? Huh. Weird.
He's not going to retire.
No, he's never going to retire.
That's never going to happen. The guy, I mean, not that I want this to happen, but that guy's going to die on the sidelines.
Oh, my God. Don't say that.
I mean, like, I don't want it to happen, but, like, it's not going to be this year. But, like, at some point in the next, like, 20 years, like, I wouldn't doubt it. I don't think he knows how to play. I don't think he knows how to do anything but coach basketball.
That's a good point. I really can't argue with it either. Oh, man. All right, John, thanks so much for joining me. I know it's really early your time. Appreciate it. And sorry about the Orange.
Happens. Thanks, Lauren.
See y'all later in the week.